when you're down and troubled, and you need some love and care, and nothing, well, nothing is going right. Close your eyes and think of me, and soon I will be there.
I'm C.J. Layton, coming to you from inside the Phantom Radio Studio, home of the premier radio bowling talk show. Long ago, Bowlers Journal International called Phantom Radio a pioneer in the field of bowling podcasts, because the show is regularly scheduled at the same time each week. PBA Hall of Famer Len Nicholson started the show in 2002. Since then, he's recorded over 1,100 shows featuring over 400 different guests, a literal who's who in bowling. So, Phantom fans, let's welcome our host, Len Nicholson, the Phantom.
Well, thank you, CJ. And a reminder that Phantom Radio is presented by the Kegel Company, the number one lane maintenance company in the world. For all of your lane maintenance needs, including 24-hour technical support, you can always rely on the Kegel Company. So go to kegel.net. Well, Phantom fans, hopefully you heard last week's show with two of our favorite guests, Carmen Salvino and Jim Dressel. If you missed it, go to our archives page and listen. I promise you'll enjoy that show. So go to kegel.net/phantom and look for the date 2/17/2021. You'll be happy that you did. Well, this week I'm going to tell you a little bit more about these two great friends. A few weeks ago, Larry Lichtenstein told you a few stories about Carmen, and I have a few more. And he was the youngest bowler to ever compete in the famous Chicago Classic League. He was also a charter member of the PBA. He was the first class to be inducted into the PBA Hall of Fame. He's in the USBC Hall of Fame and several others. And if there was a World Bowling Hall of Fame, he'd be in that too. And not only all that, he was truly a great bowler, but he was also a great entertainer on the lanes. And when he was bowling, it was hard to take your eyes off of him. He was well known as the number one worldwide ambassador of our great sport. As I mentioned, Larry told a few stories about him, and I have a few more that were also classics. Well, Larry told you about Carmen paging himself, and that was totally true. I saw it many times myself with my own eyes. In fact, one time in Las Vegas, I had the showboat. I was down on the low end, down by lanes 1 through 4, and I was cleaning everything up down there, waiting for the practice session to start. And I saw Carmen go into one of the phone booths that was down there on the low end. A few minutes later, I heard his name being paged, and fearing that he didn't hear it because he was in the closed phone booth, I rushed up to tell him that he was being paged. He then came walking by with a smile on his face, and he said, "I know, boy. My public is looking for me." He went up to the main desk, and he answered the phone. He continued talking to nobody except himself as a crowd of people seeking his autograph showed up. It was then that I figured that this was his way to locally get people to root for him during each tournament. You know, that was genius, because while he did this for a couple of days before the tournament, several people would get his autograph, and then when the tournament would start, you'd see most of those same people standing behind him rooting for him. And very few guys, especially on the morning squads, had anybody there because it was too early to watch bowling. He'd have 10, 15, 20 people behind him rooting him on. It was unbelievable. Another thing about him that you had to be cautious about was his handshake. He was so strong. And not only that, he wanted you to remember him. And so when you extended your hand, he would grab your fingers instead of grabbing your whole hand, and he would squeeze your fingers, and you didn't have much strength in your fingers, so you couldn't really fight back, and he would watch you agonize as he squeezed your hand. And I'll tell you what, once you shook hands with Carmen, he never wanted to shake hands with him again. In fact, you looked forward to it when he was meeting somebody he knew. It was kind of funny. You know, there was a time that when the PBA had the PBA school, and all the new members had to attend. Well, he would get up on the stage and tell them how important it was to have good bowling equipment, how important it was to be, you know, have a good mental game, and mostly to stay in shape. And this was when he was 75, 78 years old. He would get on the stage in front of 100 to 200 guys and do push-ups. And they weren't normal push-ups. You usually put your palms flat down on the floor, and then you do your push-ups. Well, he would turn his hands around and then do the push-ups on his wrists. Now, if you want to try something that's painful, try that. I tried it many times. I couldn't even get one done. And I've never seen anybody get more than five, except the spook. The spook could get many, many push-ups from his wrists. Another thing, you know, people thought that his antics while he was bowling was an act. But I can assure you, they weren't an act. Because many times, I'd get there on Sunday, and I'd do the lanes for Monday morning. Well, Monday morning was a scheduled day off. The tournament really didn't start till Tuesdays on the regular national tour, and that would be a practice session. So Monday was real quiet. Every Monday, Carmen would come in early in the morning, and there'd be nobody in there, and he'd be down there practicing, and it was the same routine. He'd hitch up his pants, he'd run them out, he'd jump up in the air, he'd look back real quick at the crowd, which there wasn't one, but that was just his regular ordeal that he went through. I don't think he practiced it, but he was so into bowling, and he was such an entertainer, that was part of his deal. You know, another thing about Carmen that's really important when you meet somebody new, he would look you right in the eye, and he would try to remember your name, because he met thousands and thousands of people over the years. You know, it was a trait that Dick Weber and Don Carter had, and Carmen was from the old school, and he'd look you in the eye, even if he had something to tell you. He would walk up and he'd say, "Hey, boy, I got to talk to you," and we'd go aside. And he'd tell you if he was mad, happy, whatever. He was a real man's man. You know, he gained a lot of respect for that. But anyway, I got more about Carmen. I got a lot more. And I'm sure we're going to get to it as time goes by. Basically, I can say is he was too much. I got a world of respect for him. All right, let's switch gears and talk a little bit about Jim Dressel. I met Jim in the 70s at the Firestone Tournament Champions in Akron, Ohio. That was a premier tournament. You know, all the champions' banners were displayed on the streetlights in town on the main street. The local newspapers carried full-size sections about the tournament for a week or so in advance of the event. And this tournament was huge. The major sponsors were all there. All the top PBA champions were there. All the top bowling writers were there as well. And I vividly remember my boss at the time, Joe Antonora, introducing me to Mr. Mort Lutey, who owned Bowler's Journal magazine. He was and is a real gentleman, and he introduced me to Jim, who had a column in that monthly magazine. Well, that day, Jim and I had a short conversation as two guys that meet. You know, they don't really stand there and talk for an hour like ladies do. Women talk for weeks sometimes. Men, "Hi, how are you?" and walk away. But during the conversation, I remember he asked several questions about lane conditions. and all were very prevalent. I found out that he was a scratch bowler and that he loved sports. Well, we hit it off very well because of the many similar interests. You know, not only did he love sports, but he also collected baseball cards. And he got into that business for a while, and you could barely ever get him on a trivia question about baseball back in the day. But after that tournament, I noticed that he wrote a few very nice comments about the tournament lane conditions. I did see him at a few more tournaments that year, as he was sent to the PBA major events by Bowler's Journal. Well, eventually he wrote a wonderful story about Sam Baca and myself about lane conditions and doing the lanes on the tour. He also interviewed many bowlers to get their opinions about how we were doing. By now, we had become good friends as we learned more and more about each other. I found out that not only was he a scratch bowler, he was also a scratch golfer, and he loved all sports. By this time, I had been interviewed many times by many different reporters and different bowling writers. Well, Jim was different with his approach, and it took me a long time to figure it out and to find out why he was the top in his class. He was a true journalist. His vocabulary was remarkable. He would always ask questions that had value to them relating to the particular subject matter of the interview. And more importantly than anything probably was, he would present both sides, letting the reader decide what he was presenting. And as I mentioned earlier, it took me a while to learn that he was provocative, which is a true asset. And I also mentioned earlier how not only did he talk to me and Sam and get our opinions, he also talked to the bowlers to get their opinions. And as I said, he'd allow the reader to decide for themselves. Well, as time went by, we began to know each other better and better and better. And every year, we would see each other at all the PBA majors. And at one point, Jim showed me a picture of his young daughter. He was so proud of her. It was his only child, and a few times he put her on the phone. Well, she was so sweet, barely a teenager, and she loved him so much, and he loved her the same. She was his pride and joy, and I often teased them both by saying that I wanted to marry her someday. And that was a joke, and it made both of us laugh because I was an old man, and she was a young little girl. But she was so cute, and like I say, he loved her so much, I'd love to tease him. You know, men, I'm going to just drop this in. You know, men, they're real hard, and they're strong, and they're tough, and, you know, they don't say, I love you, to everybody like women do. But when a man teases another man, that's his way of showing that guy that he loves him. So when you see a bunch of guys teasing each other, rather than say, I love you, Pards, that's their way of showing it. But anyway, at Bowl Expo each year, I'd also see him there. And that was in various cities around the country, Las Vegas. I think we were in Nashville a couple times, Indianapolis. We were all over the place. Well, people started asking me, are you ever going to do any interviews at Bowl Expo? Well, we started lining them up. And since it was wide open, sometimes I'd be doing 20 interviews, and then we put them in a can and tell them during the year that, oh, we did this at Bowl Expo, blah, blah, blah. Well, that was a very telling experience, you know, getting somebody up there for half hour, up to 20 of them. That was like 10 hours a day. So one day, just to make it more interesting, I asked Jim if he had time to help me. He goes, yeah, I can give you a little help. He says, I got a break now and then during Bowl Expo. So he started helping me with these interviews. And I tell you, looking back, when he was involved, I started getting a lot more big-time guests to be on the show, a lot more proprietors, a lot more business officials, and vice presidents and all that. So he brought some class to that show, I guarantee that. And I started with coaches, and players and executives and pro shop owners. And I thought it'd be pretty important to get some bowling writers because they could pass the word around about me, you know, doing this radio show. Because you need publicity no matter what you do in any kind of a business or any kind of a venture that you're on. But I had him on the show often, and he did us at Phantom Radio a huge favor by announcing one time that we were pioneers in the area of podcasting because our show was scheduled the same time every week. Well, even up to this day, I notice there's a lot of podcasts. Very few are scheduled at the same time. And you need that appointment. You need people to be looking forward to it. There's some podcasts now with some of my good friends. I try to tell them that. You got to have it on the same time every week because I look forward to it that way. And some of them agree. Some of them just don't do it. But anyway, I started having a yearly review show where I go back over the year. We had, you know, 52 guests during the 52 weeks because our show would go on every week on Wednesday. And that was all the different kind of guests that we had. So I announced we're going to have the review show. Well, the following week, Jim, being a man, just like Salvino is, he called me up and he says, "What was that last week?" I said, "That was our review show." He says, "The review show?" He says, "You left out about 20 things during the year that you had shows, and you never even said anything in the review show." Well, it made me think about the Army. You know, when you go in the Army and you complain about the food, they turn you into a chef. So I says, "Well, since you're complaining, why don't you come on the show with me quarterly, and we'll announce all the big things that have happened during that past quarter." He says, "Well, I wouldn't mind doing that." He says, "Because I keep track of everything that's going on, and that'd be the wisest thing to do, is give these reports quarterly so they don't build up where you got to do 50 of them in one day." So he started coming on quarterly and helping me pass on the information that had happened in the bowling industry. And I'll tell you what, we cover a lot of area each quarter. You know, I want to point one thing out, and I might embarrass some people, but this is a radio talk show, and I'm talking about bowling. So, you know, Jim Dressel and also Jim Goodwin, I got to say, you know, both of them should be in every Hall of Fame there is, but they're not. And, you know, it's kind of a slap in the face, but people don't realize both of them were in such high demand to be on the committees for these Hall of Fames. And if you were on the committee, you weren't allowed to be inducted into a Hall of Fame in whatever category it was. So I'm going to say that out loud to everybody listening, that that's the reason Jim Dressel and Jim Goodwin are not in every Hall of Fame. And trust me, they should be. I could talk for hours and hours and weeks and months about Jim and all the things that we've experienced together. But one of the greatest times of my life was when his daughter, Lindsay, got married. He had told me that she found a nice guy. His name was Chris, and he was a policeman, and she was very happy. They were getting married, and I was so happy because Jim was happy, and she was happy. And so I says, "Well, when is it?" And he told me, you know, what the date was. It was going to be in Chicago. I says, "I'm going to be there." I says, "I got to be there for that." So I made arrangements, and I have got a half-brother that lives in Chicago, so I flew in a couple days early, stayed with him, renewed our acquaintanceship. I hadn't seen him for years, and then I met Jim down at the main hotel where all the guests and everybody, and the marriage party was all meeting, and I was going to be in there at 4 o'clock. So I got there about 3:30, I went in the bar, and I waited, and I waited, and I started looking around for him at 4, and finally 4:30, no Jim. I'm thinking, "Oh, where the heck is he? I hope I'm not lost." And so 5 o'clock, he calls up. He goes, "I'm on my way. I'm lost. I'm in traffic. Well, anybody that knows Jim knows that that wouldn't be anything uncommon of him getting lost. So he finally showed up, and he parked the car, you know, in the garage, and he came running in, and he goes, "We got to be at the dinner. There's a big wedding dinner." He says, "But it's somewhere out of town." He says, "So we got to go out there." I said, "All right." So I go outside. He goes, "I got to go get the car." Well, it was in, you know, it was in the valet. And so I'm waiting out there for about half an hour. So he finally shows up. And I said, "Where is this place?" He says, "It's out of town, about 20 miles. So naturally, we get lost. We're heading out there to this really nice restaurant where all the wedding party is. There's probably about 30 people there. Anyway, we come walking in to this beautiful restaurant, and I'll tell you what, everybody's giving us the dirty look, even his daughter. And we kind of hunched over our shoulders, and we went to the back of the room, and we got a table, and so we go to the dinner. So we don't want to go all the way back into town because we're going to get lost. So we got a room out there somewhere out in the hills outside of Chicago. And then the next day, we drove into Chicago, and we got on we went to that main hotel, and he parked the car in valet, and we're all dressed up in our suits and ties and all that. And he's got a tuxedo on. He looks sharp. And we rode this bus. We got this courtesy bus. And we rode out across a little bay there in Chicago to this beautiful place. It's about 20 minutes away by bus. And I'll tell you what, this wedding was first class all the way. I'd have been a loss and a real problem if I had to pay for that thing. I don't know what it cost, but it's first class all the way. It had food, it had drinks, it had everything, dancing. I even saw Jim dancing, which I never thought I would. But we got there about 6, watched the sunset, 8, then we watched the wedding. That was beautiful. I had tears in my eyes because Chris was marrying her and not me. And so, you know, we had a few toddies and watching Jim dance, that was a thing. And then we got to look over, you know, at the city of Chicago, the skyline. It was just an unbelievable thing. And finally, about midnight, we says, "Okay, we better go." So we go outside and we find out the bus had already left. Now, we're out there in this island. There's no cabs. There's no buses. There's no nothing. And we're looking, and we got about a mile to go to the hotel. We start walking. And me and him aren't in the greatest shape. Well, walking a block is a lot for us. After about 6 blocks, we're huffing and puffing. Cars are driving by. We're hitchhiking. Nobody's picking us up. Because a few people were smart enough to have their car out there at that island. Well, we get about 8 blocks away, and there's this pickup truck over on the side of the road. And he looks at me, I look at him, a guy sitting there, and says, "Hey, what are you doing?" He goes, "Oh, I'm just looking for somebody, blah, blah, blah," some guy by himself. Says, "Hey, will you give us a ride to the hotel?" And we told him the name of the hotel. It was about a mile or two away. And he goes, "Sure, hop in." So this nice guy, and there was a lot of traffic out there at the time, he drove us all the way to the front door of the hotel. And so we went back in, we got the car, and now we're heading back out to the hotel we stayed at the night before. And naturally, we get lost. And I says, "Jim, where are we?" And he goes, "I don't know. I think they just built this highway." It was a line I'll never forget. So we go back and we sit down at the bar. We're having a couple of drinks. And he goes, "Come on, let's go over here for a minute." Well, he broke open a couple of cigars, which we would do once in a while. And he was a cigar affectionaire. He knew everything about cigars. He got the magazine every month. And he hands it to me. They're wrapped like in gold. And I said, "Man, these look good." He goes, "They're $200 a piece." He says, "Enjoy." Well, we sat out in the back at this table, and we figured out all the problems in life, all the problems in the world, all the problems with bowling and all that. And we had one of the greatest times of my whole life. We spent about an hour or two out there smoking these $200 cigars. And you know what? We both quit smoking cigars. Actually, both quit smoking after that, which was really a blessing in disguise. But I got to tell you, that was, as I said, one of the greatest times of my life. And that's when I truly fell in love with Jim Dressel. So, Phantom fans, you know, I've got a lot more about Jim I could talk about, and I'm going to over time, because we're going to do a lot of these interviews from some of the past greats, like we've been doing with Ray Bluth and Dick Weber and Carmen Salvino and all that. So we appreciate you listening in. The old clock in the wall is telling me that we're out of time, and I can't believe how quickly the time flies in this show. And it's probably why they say it's the fastest show in all of sports, but hope that you all enjoyed it. And we look forward to talking to all of you again next week. We'll have yet another interesting guest to talk to. In closing, we sincerely want to thank our sponsors, Storm Bowling Products, Brad Edelman from the High Roller, and our newest sponsor, Dave Kowalski from Auto Value and Bumper to Bumper. Dave is also totally involved in the Michigan High School Bowler Coaches Association, where they have 7,000 bowlers. And also, a reminder from Storm, they want us to tell you that for you to find the best fit in your game, test out the SPI Matchmaker tool from our friends at Storm Bowling and Roto Grip and 900 Goble. So go to their website and look for the Matchmaker tool and test out the SPI Matchmaker. And we want to dedicate this phone to a good friend and a good employee at Cable, at Kegel. She passed away this past week, and we're all going to miss her. She was loved by everybody, did a great job, and God bless her. Mary Fran. So for Phantom Radio, this is the Phantom.
When you're down and troubled, and you need some love and care, and nothing, well, nothing is going right, close your eyes and think of me, and soon